Several times since their first meeting, he'd almost sworn the hair had had a bizarre life of its own, the vermilion frond swaying gently in the breeze when there'd been no wind at all. Christy also had the power of seeing. He knew that. She could feel what was going to happen. Not like a full doomy, but enough to give a distant early warning of trouble. Also, she had staggeringly good hearing and vision. Added to the fact that on occasion she was capable of feats of almost superhuman strength, it was enough to scare anyone. She was sitting, knees drawn up to her chest, wearing khaki overalls tucked into a pair of beautiful western boots, which were made of dark blue calf with inlaid falcons in silver leather. The toes of the boots were chiseled silver points, making them both attractive and potentially lethal. She wore a holster that contained a silvered Heckler & Koch P7A13 pistol that fired 9mm rounds.
Back with us, Jack?
Uh-huh.
By Gaia, but I'll never forget my first jump. Felt like my head was still 1,000 miles behind me.
Jack nodded, pushing up until he was standing.
Oh.
The room swayed about him, and he staggered, nearly falling. With an effort, he retained his balance.
Don't push it, Jack.
Jack begrudgingly listened to the sixth and last member of the group, the leader, Ryan Cotter. Ever since their first meeting, Jack Lauren had felt instinctively that Ryan Cotter was a man he could follow. In the swamps, Jack had been leader, despite his youth, because nobody else killed as well as he did. Ryan Cotter was something else. Jack stared across the gateway Matran's chamber at him. Ryan was stretched out on the floor, feet crossed, looking not terribly uncomfortable. He was the tallest in the party, about a foot taller than the white-haired boy, and lean-built, with broad shoulders and narrow hips. His hair was a mat of tight black curls, spreading over the white fur collar of his long coat of treated skins. Around his neck was a white silk scarf. Finn had once told Jack that there were lead weights in each end of the scarf that turned it into an excellent garrote. The man's face was thin, with high cheekbones. On the right side, a long scar ran from the mouth to the corner of the eye, which was a chilling pale blue. The left eye was gone, the raw, weeping socket concealed by a leather patch. Finn had told Jack that Ryan's own brother had been responsible for the wound, but he didn't believe the fat man. Finnegan didn't always tell the whole truth. Ryan wore a brown shirt and brown pants, with the bottom slit so that they could slide easily over his combat boots. His right hand rested on the butt of a Heckler & Koch G12 caseless 50-shot automatic rifle with nightscope and silencer. Ryan, like Finn, wore a blade at his belt. But instead of a cleaver, he carried a long steel panga, which was as broad as a machete. From the look of it, a strong man could behead an ox in a single stroke.
You just tear any harder at me, son, and you're going to bore a hole through me.
Sorry, Ryan. Was looking at your hand blaster.
The one-eyed man took the pistol out of his belt.
Take a look for yourself.
Ryan lobbed it across the small room. Jack caught it easily in his right hand and studied it.
Never seen one like this. 6 hour, is it?
Good eye, boy.
Ryan glanced across at JB. He could tell JB wanted to talk about the gun. Weapons were the only thing Dix loved talking about.
You're the armorer. You tell him all about it.
Model P226. 9mm. 15 rounds. Push-button mag release. Barrel length 4.41 inches. Overall length, 7.72 inches.
Wait.
I'm coming to that, son. Keep your carriage behind the horse.
Sorry.
Weighs in at precisely 25.52 ounces. Sig Sauer, like you said. Second half of the name's for J.P. Sauer and Son of Eckernförde. Sig is for Schweizerische Industriegesellschaft. Anything else you want to know about the blaster?
You mean there's fucking more? Fuck.
How come it's so cold?
He shivered in his tattered canvas and leather coat and breeches, dyed brown, gray, and green for camouflage. He felt the weight of his trusty .357 Magnum, satin finish with a 6-inch barrel, strapped to his thigh in its holster.
Yeah, it is kind of cold.
Ryan stood up with the easy grace of a large cat.
Maybe find some warm clothes in the redoubt?
Bracing is the word I would use. So much healthier than the awful humidity of the swamps. Whatever they were called.
A chafalaya, Doc.
God bless you, Mr. Dix. Actually, Gesundheit is what we used to say.
What the hell are you talking about, Doc?
Where are we now?
The boy stretched himself and pushed his mane of white hair away from his eyes.
We're here.
We always here.
Lori looked around at the others, to make sure they realized she was joking.
Guess she's got that fucking right. We're always here.
Most of the other gateways Ryan had passed through had been clean and orderly. Once everyone was on their feet, blasters cocked and ready, he reached out and opened the door. For several seconds, nobody moved or spoke.
Fire blast.
The room beyond the door was around 5 paces in length by 3 paces wide. The walls were painted a muted cream, faded with age. Virtually all the other gateways Ryan and his companions had been through had been thoroughly cleaned by the Americans nearly 100 years ago. Kept immaculate and sealed, they had been so well hidden that nearly all trace of their presence had long been forgotten, all records lost. But this one looked as if it had been vacated only 30 seconds ago. That was the first reaction from Ryan and the others. Ryan's finger tightened instinctively on the trigger of the G-12, ready to spray the room with a veil of instant death. He could feel the tension all around him as everyone waited. He sniffed at the air.
Doesn't smell right. Christy?
The woman was at his elbow, so close that her arm brushed against his. She shook her head slowly.
No. Can't hear anything. The air's stale. By Gaia, but it's years stale in here.
There was a newspaper open on the plastic top table, with an aluminum can that once contained Coke resting on top of it. A plastic plate held the remnants of a meal, a maroon plastic knife and fork placed casually beside it, as if the eater had been interrupted only moments before. Several notices were pinned to a board near the far door, which, as Ryan saw instantly, was locked. A pack of chewing gum lay on the floor by one of the table legs. The room was totally, utterly still and silent.
These environs look like the parody club at 5 in the morning.
A large sign was screwed to the wall above the entrance to the gateway. Its message was the same as that of other redoubts. Entry absolutely forbidden to all but B-12 cleared personnel. Matrans.
All right, people, take care. Just a maybe that something's booby-trapped here.
J.B. Dix trained his expert eye on their surroundings.
Don't see it, Ryan. No wires, no batteries. Nothing big enough to hide a grin. That's apart from the cupboard there.
Against the wall next to the heavy vanadium steel door was a green metal cabinet. Jack slid past Ryan, eager to prove himself.
Alec.
Easy, Whitey.
The boy moved slowly across the room. He made it about halfway to the cupboard.
Stop right there.
Why?
Look at the floor.
None of them had noticed the dust. Jack's feet had left deep impressions in the velvet soft layer, nearly a half inch thick.
Whoa, sloppy fucking housekeepers they got here.
Has to be untouched for years, maybe decades. Look at the table. It's everywhere.
The young albino flicked a finger at the door of the cabinet, as if he feared an electric shock. He hesitated only a second, then grasped the handle and swung the door open. It was full of paper. There were 6 shelves on the left and 5 on the right, each filled with neat stacks of paper in different colors and sizes, along with folders and envelopes in cream and white and light brown. All blank. Jack pulled sheets off here and there, holding them up to show the others the smooth, untouched blankness.
Must be a store. Nothing used.
It was a disappointment to Ryan. As he moved through the Deathlands, he was always hoping to come across more information about the times before the Great Fighting. He'd seen books, films, vids, tapes, papers, but all of that gave only a glimpse through a tiny crack in time. He dreamed sometimes of finding some key to the past, some way of learning what madness had raced through the planet nearly a century back. Like a blinding virus, it had been an insanity that had torn apart the world, wrecking it beyond any hope of redemption. Too much had been lost for it ever to be put back together as it had been. The population had been decimated once, and then again and again. Most science had been lost forever, and Ryan believed that was no bad thing. From what little he'd learned about the years before 2001, it seemed that the scientists should carry almost as heavy a burden of responsibility for Deathlands as the rabid politicians. Now the best that he could hope for was that he and his friends would be like a single wave beating upon a polluted shore, washing over it and withdrawing, leaving the shingled beach a little cleaner.
Look at this newspaper. It's like dried ashes.
She laid it down on the table, moving the drink can out of the way. Ryan leaned over to read the faint newsprint. It was called the Ginsburg Falls Courier and was apparently registered at Ginsburg Falls, Oregon. It was dated January 19th, 2001.
Day before Armageddon.
What is it?
Newspaper from the last day of the old world.
JB, where's Oregon? Up north and west, isn't it?
Yeah, lay between California and Washington. Lots of mountains, not much else.
Never got there with a trader.
Me either.
The two men had known each other for nearly 10 years. Both of them had joined the wagon trains run by the man called the trader. Ryan had become the right-hand man on the wags, and JB had been the armorer. They'd roamed most of the central part of Deathlands, buying cheap and selling expensive. It was a profession with a high risk factor. Times you met folks wanted to pay less than your price. Times you even met folks didn't want to pay at all. That was why the ordinary trucks were guarded by war wags. That was why you saw a heap of dying when you rode with the trader.
What's it say?
Christie stooped lower, her shadow almost obscuring the delicate newspaper. As she moved it with one hand, parts of the edge flaked away, turning instantly into dust.
Don't breathe on it or it's going to fall apart.
Everyone moved back a little, except Doc Tanner, who seemed almost hypnotized by the crumbling artifact from before the big chill.
What was concerning the good people of Ginsburg Falls on the very day before most of them went grinning to meet their maker? Or was this just for the mindless robots who ran these redoubts?
Front page says in big letters, "Zoning row splits council." Doesn't say anything about there going to be a war or anything like that.
It must.
No. Next story's about women picketing a porn vid store on Red Maple Street.
Ryan shook his head and read more items from the front page.
Councilman Hewer promises ped-exing review. And what's this? Shock scam threatens thrift store. There's not a word. It can't be right. Doc, you know most about the past. It can't be from the day before it started.
Before the missiles darkened the skies and night eternal fell upon this land of the free? Oh, yes. If one saw a bigger paper, the Los Angeles Sheets or the Times or the Post, they would have carried it for months, building international tension, threats and promises. Folks up here in rural Oregon wouldn't have been that worried. There'd been the talk before. There was Cuba. Sweet Jesus, but that was... Oh, such a yearning for small-town trivia that stirs my bosom, my dear friends.
I can read. This here's about librarian, to do with books. Says got banned some foreign writers. Can't make out names.
Doc Tanner peered at where Jack was pointing.
Tolstoy, Chekhov, Anton Pavlovich Chekhov, Dostoevsky, Fyodor Mikhailovich, Russian writers. She was banning them, was she? A short step from burning them. Too late, she was. Oh, yes, I guess I was wrong. It had reached Ginsburg Falls, after all.
Finnegan had been looking through the notices pinned to the board. The first one he touched disintegrated in a shower of fine dust, mingling with the pale gray powder that covered everything.
Just rosters, names and times for duties, lots of letters and numbers. Nothing fucking means a thing now. Got watch times right through to the end of the month. Huh. No warnings? No clue that the world is going to fall out of their bottoms?
There.
Lori pointed to a piece of paper that lay on the floor under the table. Even through the layer of dirt, the red writing, faded to a dull pink, was visible.
Evac 900. What the fuck's that mean?
Evacuate at 9 in the morning. Story is that the last whistle got blown around noon that day. Where would they have gone?
Nobody replied. Not one of the other redoubts had shown signs of life like this. For some reason that nobody would ever know, this mountain hideaway in Oregon had been left longer than most. Most of the gateways had a small anteroom like this one. If this one was like the others, then the master control room would be beyond the locked door, with its banks of electrical equipment, powered by either a solar or nuke generator, still ticking.